Hello, welcome back to Millennial 2019. I'm now here with Critical Condition. I'm going to my camera is experiencing some technical failures just now, so I'll try to get it sorted out. But in the meantime, you have the pleasure of seeing Critical Condition, CC Bucko, Robin Riley, in full pregnancy mode. So welcome. Welcome back to Millennial. What should I call you? You want to be Robin, or should I?
You call me whatever you like. I know you prefer CC Bucko, I think. If
Yes.
Robin is easier, then you feel free to choose whatever is good for you. This is your channel.
I can't keep addressing you as Bucko though, because that sounds insulting or sarcastic. So
No.
I'll just I do love it though. I love the it's like a sound effect, like CC Bucko.
Whatever you'd like. Honestly, I won't take offense to anything you choose. It's all good.
Okay, I think I'll just address you as Robin after all, even though that is the less jokey of the alternatives.
Yes.
Okay, so welcome back to Millennial. This is your third time on. I think the first time was 2017 when you had just started your channel about 6 months earlier, and you went through a certain transformation then. And then again, and we spoke about your life up to that point. And then the next year, there's a similar thing. We talked about your year, 2018, and then we're going to do the same this time. We're going to update everyone on your life and what you've experienced this year in 2019. So take it away. And someone's saying we need to see Millennial. Sorry, not just now. I'm doing what I can. In the meantime, Critical Condition. How did you start off the year?
Well, I started off the year not online. I wasn't I hadn't come back, I think, in the very beginning of the year. It wasn't until the spring that I decided to restart my channel once again. And it was the beginning of my year offline was a tumultuous time. It was a time where I was trying to get back on my feet. I guess the red pill had fully taken its hold on my life at that point. And I was in a process of dismantling a life that I was unhappy with and that I wasn't thriving in, and that was holding me back in a lot of ways.
That's
And
interesting. I remember the first your first millennial. We spoke about that and how you had come from a very liberal, happy-go-lucky sort of background, and it was sweet, and there was an innocence to it. And I think that you were, and I don't want to be patronizing here, but I think that you were sort of understanding that there was something deep and quite profound going on, and you were sort of scared of it. You were resisting it.
Yes, that's very true. I was scared of it. I mean, I remember back in 2016 being recommended, like in my YouTube search options, like anti-feminist videos. And I remember looking at them and being afraid to click on them because I was afraid that it would make sense to me. I was afraid that, it would change my mind, because there had been many, many instances, throughout the years of me watching YouTube where I've clicked on something just sort of randomly, encountered it, and then had my mind drastically changed on topics. Because I've always loved YouTube. I've always hated TV. YouTube has always been a part of my like sort of like leisure time, I suppose. And so I guess where was I? Sorry, pregnancy brain.
Oh, well, you were saying that you were at this threshold of
Ah,
change.
yes. Yes. So, I guess I really missed making content. And once I had sort of got back on my feet, moved out of my parents' house because I had moved back with my parents for a short time. And my life had begun to take a new trajectory that I felt confident in. I felt stable again. I felt like I had a clear direction. And that I had learned something from my first go as a YouTuber. I knew a little bit more clearly what it was that I wanted to do differently. And
I remember you saying at the, sorry to interrupt. I remember you
No,
saying at
no.
the time that you felt too old to be a female YouTuber. You said it was like, it was something for girls in their early 20s and late teens.
Well, I felt like embarrassed for some reason that I was, I guess, like an adult online making content. I don't know why I felt that way. I think that may have been something that I felt from peers that are actually like, they're no longer close friends of mine anymore. There was like a series of disavowals that happened this year of old friends from university. And I know that they would have kind of looked at what I was doing as kind of like an immature, self-indulgent activity. And so I think that feeling of, you know, I'm too old to be doing this, maybe was kind of something that I absorbed from them a little bit. But also I felt like, you know,
it's interesting that that came from with outside the movement and not from within the YouTube sphere of men, you know, MGTOWs and so on moaning about,
oh yes, I'm sure that was a part of it, you know, because I was, you know, not, well, I wasn't, I'm 30 now, right? So I'm not a spring chicken anymore. and I guess it was definitely like women's age is always an easy target for some of the sort of nastier anonymous characters that you get in your comment section. Sometimes it's an easy thing that you can, make a woman feel bad about. But I think, you know, it was really the fact that I didn't have my life in order. You know, I didn't feel like I was living a mature adult life with loads of responsibility, that I felt insecure maybe about the fact that I was making content online, you know, because my real life wasn't, I don't know, wasn't where I wanted it to be. Whereas now I feel like I've come into a maturity, and I have tons of responsibility in my life right now. And I'm very proud of the life I'm living now. So it's easier. Yes. So obviously, if you are aware of my content, which I'm sure a lot of people who are in your audience right now will be, I recently got married this year to the man of my dreams. I couldn't be happier. I got pregnant soon after we were married, and I moved back home to Canada. I had been living in Europe for about 7 years. So these three big, huge sort of pivotal changes in my life have really taken my content in a little bit of a new direction. And it's given me a lot of hope for the future of my content.
Right. I've got my camera working at last. So sorry about that, everyone.
Lovely to see you. I love the lights in the background.
Yeah, they are quite ornate. We were talking about it in the previous stream. And yeah, quite a bit of effort went into this. They're just Christmas tree lights. But I think they provide a nice thing with the soft focus background.
It's lovely.
Thank you very much. So where were you at the start of this year?
The start of this year. So yeah, like I said,
that was when you were on your hiatus, and then
I was in Belgium. So I was in Belgium at that time, just trying to get on my feet, just trying to like stabilize from dismantling an old life.
And do you feel that the movement, or whatever you want to call it, being red pill, let's say the red pill, do you feel that helped? Helped you directly to do that? Or was it something that you had to, was it a very personal journey to you where you had to undo things?
I think it was both, you know, because, you know, everyone kind of defines the red pill in different ways. And then of course there are different topics on which you can be red pilled, right? So it was like sort of a cascade of different realizations that I came to, which forced me to stop lying to myself about things, you know, stop lying to myself about being happy where I was, you know, that I couldn't do any better than this, or, you know, being satisfied or trying to be satisfied with things that I ultimately deep down wasn't. And so I just thought, this is my last chance to.
Could you identify some of those things that you were unhappy with about your life, your worldview?
Of course. Well, I mean, I think one of the biggest things was that I was living abroad. I had been traveling the world and living in different countries for, since I was 23, so quite a long time. And I had reached a stage where I didn't want to be uprooted anymore. And I just was longing for familiarity. I was longing for home. I was ready to return and put down roots. So that was one of the biggest things. And that was informed largely by me learning about nationalism and learning about like why being among people who are like you and who share your ethnicity and your cultural identity and all those things are extremely important to who one is as a person. So that was one thing. And then there was kind of the gender thing, you know, where, which exposed a lot of lies, I think, for myself and the kind of woman that I was. I wasn't happy with the kind of woman that I was, and I wasn't happy with the relationship that I was in. Back then, I was a bit of a hippie, so I was with a guy who was like, I don't believe in marriage. It was like that kind of a thing, you know? So it was a directionless relationship.
Right, yeah. I know that you were living in Ireland for a long time, because the first time I spoke to you, and I think the second time I spoke to you, it was almost like speaking to an Irish woman.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's something that, you know, I think that's something that I've experienced like in a lot of different places. Right now, I don't have a strong Newfie accent, but if I went back home and I was surrounded by my family, that accent would come out. And, you know, I lived in Ireland for almost 7 years. And in Ireland, the social groups were very cliquey, I found. Like the people who had been hanging out with each other that I would encounter had known each other since they were in kindergarten. And so me picking up the dialect and speaking like them and using their slang was a way of coping with my difference from them, you know?
On one of your previous millennials, you said, I just couldn't be arsed.
I love that saying. I still say things like that sometimes. Sometimes I still say I'm going to go to the loo because I just like how it sounds better. And it's not so different from the way people speak in certain regions of Newfoundland where I'm from. So it wasn't totally alien to me.
So to get back to where you were there, you were in a sort of modern relationship, not going anywhere. That is an interesting statement in itself, because I think there's a lot to be said for, you know, we hear now that one of the ways that the modern lifestyle, just to use a very broad phrase, is sold to us is it enables you to choose your own direction in life, total openness and all this and flexibility. Mm-hmm. But actually what you're perceiving in it is a stasis, a stagnancy. It actually, your life isn't going anywhere if you're just, the extended adolescence of the modern 20-something and even 30-something.
Yes, exactly. And along with that realization that I've been stagnant for a long time was the realization that I was running out of time to build a family, right?
And that's something that a lot of young women some would say not so young women in their late 20s, that realization is a very common thing now, that, you know, it's a very well-known thing that hits the biological clock.
Yes. And I feel very fortunate that I realized it in time that I could, you know, rein it in and stabilize and course correct, because there are a lot of women who either because of stubbornness or pride, or, you know, not actually encountering, you know, the facts about these things. They don't actually make it, and they encounter a lot of suffering, I think, later on, which is a part of what I'm trying to help women with my content now.
Yeah. In that regard, what do you think? I mean, this is probably an obvious question, but I'd like to hear your perspective on it. Mm-hmm. People like Stefan Molyneux.
Yeah, he's blocked right now. He's like blocked. He's blocked for a while.
him and people like him, and there are a few in the live chat here. What do you think about that whole thing where guys, you know, I should preface this. I've got a reputation as the thought whisperer, and I'm always on the side of women, but I don't know what I can say about this, because I think that a lot of negative energy does get just wasted. And I'm sure this will come up in the chat with Philosopher Cat later. Mm-hmm. There's a battle between the sexes that really should not be taking place. And mm-hmm. a lot of negative energy that men have in the movement, they direct it towards women. Now, they might have personal reasons for that. They've had a bad time with women, but also I think just because the culture of the movement is, it makes such a big deal out of the biological clock that then men are tempted to sort of, instead of improving their own lives, Mm-hmm. They attack women for ignoring their biological clock. And so then you get a certain sadistic pleasure being taken in, haha, your eggs have dried up. I think it's really, I mean, I don't know what I can say without sounding like a simp. I just find that really disgusting and distasteful, because where does it get the guy who says that? How does that even benefit you, let alone the women that you're castigating? It doesn't benefit anyone. It just creates a terrible atmosphere. So, like, yes. Well done. That's yes. My attitude about this, which is very predictable. Sorry, everyone, but there we are.
No, I completely agree with you. I think a lot of it is entertainment. You know, like, I think Stefan will often say, you know, well, these are the facts, right? Like, this is the facts. These are the cold, hard facts, ladies, deal with it. And then it's like a dunk, right? And then everyone applauds, like, oh yeah, you really got those roasties. Like, yeah, we got them. And I get it. You know, there's a bit of resentment there, and maybe that resentment is justified in some ways, you know, but to put this fear, I think, in women about the fact that they're starting a bit later, it neglects to acknowledge the fact that a lot of these women have been propagandized to put off putting off family planning. They've been told that you need to prioritize your career, from their parents, from their educators, from their culture, to the entertainment industry.
I always say, right? We're all enmeshed in modernity.
Yes.
Or post-modernity. We're all in this culture. So is it really worth holding it against other people that they are also enmeshed in this culture? I mean, are you surprised? Is that some sort of strange thing to you? And why be angry? Why bother being angry at them for it? I just don't see the point. Some guy said earlier just now that there was a bitchy comment that he said, hold on a minute. Look, I just want to answer this quickly, get it over with.
Yeah, of course.
hold on. Women are too easily swayed. Just look at their race mixing. This is a perfect example of what I'm talking about, right? Look, I feel it too, right? It's a horrible thing to witness. It's sort of annoying and whatever. But men race mix more than women do. I believe if you go by the OkCupid thing, white women are actually the most loyal in this regard. So why are you even bothering to use that as an example of women? Women are easily swayed.
But they're herd animals. They need to be led. They need to be led by strong men and by cultures which are looking out for them. You know, if they live in a culture like our modern culture, there are going to be victims. There are going to be casualties of that. And that's what you're seeing when you look at stats regarding like women using like antidepressants for like 10 years, you know, well into their 30s. And the other thing I would just like to mention about the Stefan thing, like, I think it really fails to acknowledge the fact that historically women have always had children in their 30s. They're only about 10% of the population deals with, a mechanical kind of infertility, right? Where it would become increasingly difficult in your early 30s to conceive a child. But women have always had children in their 30s, even back when we had, you know, families of 12. They women just started earlier. The other thing is that like sperm counts are on the decline, right? And I think Stefan, like, okay, he can talk about the fertility window. I think he lacks tact. I think he lacks subtlety, and I think he lacks an appreciation for what women actually find persuasive. But why also ignore the male side of this? There's a lot of science out there that says that the later men wait to have children, the less quality sperm they have, and you have more instances of things like autism and genetic illnesses. So why not educate both the sexes about the importance of starting your family as soon as you found that right person? Why just make it into this kind of, you know, thing on Twitter where you're actually dividing people? I think you're giving women like me who were, I think misled and innocently misled, and then, you know, realizing these things late, but trying to pull it back together, you're giving these women a complex for no reason. And we're on your side. Like, we agree with you. We realize we messed up, you know, give us a break a little bit. We're trying to course correct the best we can.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. other people have said this to me, both male and female have made this point that they're trying, what can I do?
The ones who aren't trying, like the feminists who are cat ladies, like, do you really want them to be reproducing? Let them exit the gene pool. Why does it matter whether or not we convince millions of cat ladies to have babies?
And another thing is, why not use that energy instead of attacking women in the movement who are trying to do the right thing? Why not use that energy to attack the opposition? Have we not got enough? This is what always gets me, right? The infighting in the movement. Do we not have enough enemies on the outside who are constantly attacking us in every way, on Twitter, on Facebook, on YouTube, in the comment threads, in the legal realm, in the cultural realm? Do we not have enough enemies? Fucking wise up. I don't know what else to say about that. It's just never ceases to amaze me how much energy is wasted on this.
Yes, I agree. And it's a part of the reason why Twitter has become such a toxic place. It's a part of the reason why when I did start up my channel back up again in the spring of this year, I made a commitment to myself that I would work towards making content for women, because not only was I a little uncomfortable with the fact that I had gained this large male following, that was never something that I anticipated. You know, I've always been interested in politics as a woman. So when I started making political content on YouTube, I had no assumptions about, you know, what the gender of my audience would be. I thought it would be mixed like any other topic pretty much, but I was sadly mistaken. And, you know, that kind of abuse wears on you, you know, like I think, I'm a sensitive girl. Like I, it hurts when you have like a constant barrage of people who, you know, you're just trying to produce something of value. You're trying to put yourself out there. You're trying to be vulnerable and do something good. And then there's just this constant chatter from the peanut gallery that's kind of bringing you down. And I found that that was less so with women. And so I decided to switch the sort of focus of my content towards helping women who are like me specifically and trying to build up that audience.
Yeah, I mean, advice that I gave to one female content creator was just to don't look at your own comments. Let someone else handle your social media, because, you know, there is so much shit that comes in.
Yes, there really is. And it wears on you. And I don't think it's, like you said, we're at a point, a pivotal point, I think, in this movement where we need to be trying to find the things that bring us together. And we need to be trying to find the common ground. And I think we need to be sympathetic to the fact that we are all scarred in our own ways by modernity, and to stop trying to, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater and give people a break, you know?
I mean, from my own perspective, I've made so many mistakes that I just feel I'm not in any position to judge other people. So
no, that's how I feel too.
Really, yeah, I don't really even do it, at least not much, unless it's Mike Isaacson.
I don't know who that is.
You don't want to. But yeah, basically there's enough to do, and there are enough enemies to attack without, you know, attacking each other. And I think that, but again, I think this is probably something that will correct itself over time as the movement grows. I think a lot of it just now is frustration, and you know, people are looking for, there's a certain crabs in the bucket mentality, but I think it has probably got better with time, certainly better than it was 2 years ago, because the movement just continues to grow, and I think there are more people in it now, and there's more stuff to do than there was.
Yes, and that's how I feel now. You know, I feel like you know, the summer of this year, I was still making some political commentary, but only like, I wasn't like following the news reel in a way where I was like pumping out a video every couple of days on topical things. I would only really make a video that was political commentary if there was something which moved me inside and I felt compelled to say something about it. And I felt like I had something relevant or maybe unique that I hadn't heard anyone else say to share with my audience about. But I found I was getting worn down by this sort of thing. It kind of felt like despair peddling. It felt like I was inviting a kind of negativity into my life, and it was fruitless. I wasn't getting anything out of it personally, except abuse. And I'd obviously spoken to many women who were also in the movement or who are content creators behind the scenes, and found that this was something which was really common. So I decided to start my show, Girl Talk, which is just like a little chatty show with women across the dissident right and a few centrists as well. Like, I try to keep it somewhat balanced. I have no problem speaking with people who don't totally agree with me on everything. So that was kind of like a no-brainer to try and include people who slightly disagree with me. But I feel like what I accomplished in doing that was bringing together a bunch of really great, inspiring women into one place and networking them all together, not just through my show, but behind the scenes. And we have our own little network now where we can rely on each other and we can support each other and we can, you know, collaborate with each other. And I think that that has strengthened, it's strengthened and somewhat segregated some of the women from the kind of abuse, MGTOW, scene that we were kind of stuck in before.
Someone is saying, you know, I don't understand women and that I think they're just like men. And I asked the person to elaborate, and she says, and it is a woman who says this, women want to be patrolled and they do respond to social pressure. I know that they respond, everyone responds to social pressure.
Yes.
It often amazes me how feminine men are in this regard. Mm-hmm. If you're going to say that that's a feminine trait. Everyone responds to social pressure. Yes, women do. It's a matter of what the social pressure is like. Is it actually just sadistic, endless, negative, unhelpful bullying, or is it not?
Well, yeah. I mean, what initially, and I don't want to go into Jordan Peterson in this conversation because we've talked about him way too much already in our previous millennials, but I will just say that when I did become aware of the fertility window thing, it was because of a lecture that I heard from Jordan Peterson. Right. So this was a very sympathetic, it wasn't an emotional based argument, right? There was no, Jordan Peterson had no personal emotional investment in what was happening to women. He was a clinical psychologist who had noticed, this is something that I'm seeing in my practice. And then I thought to myself, oh God, like, this makes sense to me too. And so that was the thing that made me realize, you know, where I had gone wrong. It wasn't like some, like, tweet thread about egg counts, basically, that you know, changed my mind or turned me towards family life. It was a completely different method of persuasion.
Yeah. I mean, I think that if a lot of people, and this is something that's been pointed out by others, a lot of people, women, but also men as well, if they see a hugely negative atmosphere in a movement, cultural sphere, whatever, they're just going to turn away. I think this is a very important point to make. Do we want to be endlessly judging each other and other people on lifestyle choices and being endlessly negative and, you know, whatever, cruel about
There's
it?
There's a lot of purity spiraling that goes on too, you know? I mean, I think, okay, there's a little bit of truth in that statement, women like to be patrolled, but it would be my perspective that women want to be patrolled by someone who loves them and who actually has their best interest in mind, like their husband. My husband patrols me all the time. Like, you know, he course corrects me all the time, and he makes sure that I'm not, you know, being neurotic all the time. When that is coming from like a vitriolic, anonymous person on the internet, I don't think it actually has that much of a positive effect on the world.
No, indeed. Indeed. Well, let's move on from this, because I think we've made the point.
And, yes.
I think we've probably annoyed enough people already just by doing this. But I stand by it. Like, I'm unashamed about this. I understand the whole thing, right? I know women want to be led. I understand that. I know that people respond to social pressure. Yes. But a lot of this is just negative. And a lot of it is not coming from a good place either. It's just not what it pretends to be. So, all right, let's move on from that and talk about your progress this year.
The Girl Talk thing has been huge for me. And I think in a very selfish way, I knew I was moving towards motherhood. I was very hopeful about the fact that I wouldn't have any trouble conceiving.
Are you scared of motherhood?
No, I was scared of not being able to conceive a child. because of this rhetoric that we just mentioned, right? You know, that you've hit the wall, you're 30, like you're not going to be able to have a child. So like that got to me, as it does many women. I'm very fortunate that it didn't take me long at all to conceive this child. But it was something that I had been hoping for and wanting for a very long time. I think I actually mentioned to you in the previous millennial that I wanted to move towards family life. That was my goal for the new year.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and that's what I did. You know, I prioritized that building up of my own life and of the kind of life that I felt like it would be, a life that would be worth sharing, a life that could be inspiring to other women who are lost like me. But I felt like I had to do it first before I could start, you know, preaching about the virtues of family and the virtues of motherhood and all these things as a woman who wasn't actually doing it herself. And so I started, that was really important to me because I'm very much of a kind of person who likes to practice what they preach. It makes me feel extremely uncomfortable to tell people to do things that I'm unable to do myself.
Yeah. Well, this is why one of the reasons I'm not encouraging people to do anything nowadays is I don't intend to, is that until I can stand as an example of it, it does seem like, hollow.
Yes, yes, exactly. And there's something more powerful when, you know, you can tell people, give people advice from a place of experience too. You know, I think it lands better because people can see the results in you and that advice gets transferred a little bit more easily. But so I was very hopeful, praying a lot about, not having any trouble building my family and getting to marriage swiftly, because I felt this pressure and this urgency to start soon because I don't want a small family. I want to have at least 3 or 4 kids. So I started to surround myself with women who were mothers, who were hopeful mothers as well. And in a very selfish way, I just started to learn from them and use them as resources for my own life, in the hopes that when I was pregnant and moving towards motherhood, I would be able to use this online network as a support system. Because I think, you know, when we get nostalgic about the past and we get nostalgic about like the 50s and stuff, how things used to be so good, we forget that even in the 50s, we were quite atomized. And there was a lot of community that had already been lost at that point. Motherhood and family building, it was a community event, right? It was something which women who were near to one another in their neighborhood and in their community and through their churches would, you know, easily support each other in. And I think that's something that we've lost, you know, in modern society. And it's something that you can use the internet to alleviate in a big way. There are huge support groups for mothers and prospective mothers on the internet. And so I'm trying to build my own little kind of hub.
You know, that's a good point. It's worth saying this because people spend so much time decrying modern technology. And, you know, I mean, you get ridiculous extremes of this. People saying that we should go and live in the forest and whatever. I mean, you know, what can I say? I love modern technology. I really do. I think it's the only, if nothing else is good about modern life, at least you can say that the technology is fantastic.
Yes, that's very true. And I think that it has, right now I have a handful of women who are either creators or just like not creators that I just know from the circles that I'm in online who have just had children. You know, they've just added a new little child to their family, or they are pregnant now, or they are currently trying to conceive a child. And I mean, if I had no access to this technology, I would be starved of resources and support from women who are going through this process with me. So I completely agree with you.
Yeah, there are a few questions that have come in. I don't know if this would be a diversion at this point, but I forgot to do the super chats with the last talk with Survive the Jive. I do apologize, everyone. That was a terrible oversight on my part. I won't do that again, or I'll endeavor not to. Someone asked, are you in favor of restricting women's rights?
It depends. When I look at women's voting patterns, am I happy with that? Do I think that it's good that women are having this influence on politics and greater society? No, not really. are we realistically going to start a debate right now about how to repeal the 19th or how to take away women? It seems pointless. It seems like something that is kind of frivolous and decadent to discuss because it's not really going to happen, whether we might like it or not.
My old friend Pale Hominid in the chat just said, I'm in favor of restricting everyone's rights.
I'm sorry, Woz. The postman is just at the door. Can I just grab the door? One second. Yes. Thank you. Sorry.
All right, I'll just take this opportunity to remind you all that you can get instant notifications when I'm streaming if you're subscribed to my Telegram channel, so please do that. Oh, she didn't mute the microphone. Still think it's over. It's all right. So, the Telegram link will be posted in the live chat, as well as the Woz PA on Twitter. So thank you. Okay, welcome back.
Sorry about that.
All right. Resume what you were saying about restricting or not restricting women's rights.
I mean, I kind of agree with what you just said, that everyone's rights should be restricted. I mean, when we're talking about the vote, if it were up to me, if I was like, you know, the queen and I could decide who gets to if I'm a queen, there wouldn't be a vote. But if I was the dictator, maybe, or if I was the person in charge, I would say I would say that only men can vote, but only men of a certain quality, meaning men who own land, men who are married, and, you know, potentially have some children or children on the way, because that shows that they're invested in the future. You know, I think that when you look at the wider society, and this is something that makes me think of Ed Dutton, you know, there's like this proliferation of mutants in our society, men and women, who are having a dysgenic effect on the overall movement of where our society is going. And that's not just women, it's men too. And so, yeah, I think the whole idea of rights has gotten completely out of control. You know, it's something that's become so, you know, it's what you hear all of the time. You know, trans rights are human rights. And, you know, people have this idea that they're entitled to some sort of lifestyle or some sort of a handout, that it's just, I think it's a result of the decadent culture that we live in more than anything. And at this point, I would much prefer to have an orderly society than one that is like ultimately free in every aspect.
I think a lot of people have that feeling that,
yeah,
you know, at least stability would be good. Yeah. Might be a bummer in some ways, but, you know, at least people would know where they stood.
Yes.
Right now there is chaos, moral chaos. And I think that's something that's bothering a lot of people, actually, even on the left. But I might be wrong about that, but I suspect that's true. Oh, somebody. Yes. Sorry, go on.
No, I'm just going to agree with you because, I mean, not everyone on the left is, you know, a pink-haired, pronoun-using feminist professor, right? Like, that's not everyone. That's a caricature of the worst on the left. And I think that there are a lot of people who would consider themselves to be, you know, in the very least left of center, who would feel quite embarrassed to be associated with those types of people.
Yeah, indeed. Somebody else asks, does Critical Condition have any beta orbiters yet? After 2 years on YouTube.
I mean, of course I do. All women have beta orbiters. I guess. Like, there are people who, I mean, what, I don't even know how to answer that question. I don't want to call people who follow me orbiters or beta. Like, people who follow me, I think they acknowledge good content. They acknowledge that I'm offering something that's of value to them, and they come back to see more of it. I'm not gonna insult my audience.
No, I mean, obviously, if not every guy who watches a woman's channel is a beta orbiter. It's a specific thing, specific kind of guy. All right, let's ask another super chat. In our culture, pure women have always been more valuable. Why should men settle for women who have had multiple partners? I think it's disgusting. Am I evil now? Now, this guy previously said that he hates white knights. I'm going to answer this question first, because why should men settle for women who have had multiple partners? Because possibly if you don't settle for that, you won't get a woman at all. That's the most obvious. And I know that's not a nice answer, but I'm being realistic, right? You're probably not going to get an 18-year-old virgin who is, you know, demure and loyal and all the rest of it. It's probably not going to happen for the vast majority of men. So that's the first thing. Robin, you take it away.
Well, I just completely agree with you. I could pose the inverse. Why should a woman take a man who's also had multiple, like tons and tons of partners? The studies that I've read show that tons of promiscuity, I think, a man can have more sexual partners, a higher body count than a woman before there is a psychological effect or a damaging effect on him. But the sort of study that I read showed that both men and women can have some pretty serious psychological damage done to them and an inability to properly pair bond with the higher the body count. So this would be an issue that I think both men and women are facing when it comes to finding a prospective partner.
Yes, for sure. Although it does, it makes sense to me that it does affect women far more than it does men.
Because absolutely.
I mean, women are, I think, are built far more to be monogamous than men are. And you can see that playing out in the way that women are. They mm-hmm. want, a woman wants to be loyal to one man. Quite a few women have said to me that I've had this experience a lot of times when a woman says to me, I wish I'd got married at 18 or 20 and only ever slept with my husband. And that was it. There is a lot of regret about sleeping with multiple partners. I don't want to use the word promiscuity because we're not even talking about promiscuity. Mm-hmm. We're just talking about having four or five partners. True. And that can lead to regret.
Absolutely it can. And it's kind of like, go back to that same argument, like we live in a culture which is like, it's promoting this kind of like excessive sex and sexuality to the point where, you know, people have been damaged, I think, just in their minds with what they're exposed to on television and what they see in pornography and all of this kind of stuff. But I mean, for this specific person who feels that it would really bother them as an individual, you know, like it's not going to be a huge problem for, I think, most men and women, because most men and women have had the same experience of having multiple relationships in the very least that have not worked out. But if you, the person who asked this question, feel that this is a deal breaker for you, then I suggest you find a church. You go find a church and find a nice shy girl somewhere in the mountains. But you're going to have to search wide and far for this woman because they are in short supply.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing I said, it leads to regret. Goes further than that. I think it does have a detrimental effect on the woman's ability to, as you said, pair bond. I mean, there's no, it's just obvious because
it's much worse for women, I think.
Yeah, because I think that it's a matter of, I think women are built to be loyal to men, and that is a crucial part. And if a woman repeatedly, like I can imagine, like with the first few partners, that mechanism mm-hmm. is still in place, but it gets progressively ruptured because it keeps getting worked against by the fact that she then sleeps with someone else. So it's obviously going to just wear down over time. So, okay, here's another question. How can we deal with the very negative effects social media and stuff like Tinder has on women? Big problem here in introverted Norway, where people spend a lot of time online. And he says the very negative effects of social media and stuff like Tinder, hypergamy, 80, 20%, etc.
Yeah, I've heard of this this issue that there was some sort of test done with Tinder where 80% of the women are going for 20% of the top men. And then so 80% of the men are kind of left without dating prospects. I think Tinder has had a extremely bad effect on dating. Like I feel so fortunate that I missed Tinder and that I didn't ever have a Tinder account and that I never got caught up in this form of dating culture. It seems like something that would, obviously promote promiscuity, make it seem like, you know, finding a date is like no different than getting like an Uber Eats. And it's just one of these things that I think dehumanizes us. It pushes us further apart. with regard to how it's affecting women. Like, women obviously have a huge sense of entitlement, like in a general sense, right? I mean, I think there are some women out there who saw Tinder from a mile away and they were like, I'm not having anything to do with that. But for the young women, impressionable women who've been caught up in this, I mean, if you've been on Tinder for like a year and you've got like a 20 plus body count, like, I don't know if there's really recovering from that. These might be casualties of modernity. And I don't wish their fate on my worst enemy, to be honest. I don't know if there's anything that can be done.
Yeah. It's, I think you might be right. I hope you're not, but it does seem like a lot of damage is being done here. Mm-hmm. A lot of psychological damage. There was another question. Asking about your specific religious denomination. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. So I was raised as an Anglican. My grandfather is an Anglican minister or lay minister. My whole family are quite religious. I went up through the church as a young girl. I was even an altar girl for a while. I was a Sunday school teacher. I was very involved in my church when I was growing up. And when I left home, like, I've always been a religious person, but I was very much affected by the kind of like the four horsemen of atheism, like this whole thing that happens like in the early 2000s. And because of that, I lost touch with my Christianity. And I... but like was still desperate for like a relationship with God. So I moved to Eastern religions like Taoism and Buddhism and Hinduism and dabbled in that for a few years. That turned out to be fruitless. Then was sort of lost and wandering, had kind of what I call a fall from grace, completely lost touch with God, turned away from God entirely. And a part of my red pilling has been coming back to my original faith, which is Anglican at the moment. The only problem with that is that, you know, I'm from a really small town. So my church wasn't like super paused, whereas like majority of the Anglican churches that you encounter, especially in Canada right now, are like completely infiltrated with liberal propaganda. They push things which, in my opinion, are anti-Christian. And so finding a church right now in my new location is a little bit of a challenge. Thankfully, because I'm a Protestant, I have a strong personal relationship with God, and I don't feel that I need, a living person to commune with God or to confess my sins. But I've been kind of flirting with the idea of trying to find either a Catholic or an Orthodox church if I am consistently unhappy with the Anglican church that is in my community. So it's something that I'm still working through. I do consider myself to be a Christian woman, and I can't call myself anything other than an Anglican at the moment because I don't have a church. So, and I know a lot of people who are in this situation, people who have either turned to Christianity for the first time or who are coming back, and they're finding that their places of worship are completely infiltrated. So it's a bit of a struggle, to be honest, at the moment.
I'm sorry to hear that. Somebody suggested Eastern Orthodox.
Yeah, I've got a friend who's Eastern Orthodox, and she loves it. She just warned me to definitely bring a veil, because like they'll make you wear like a dish rag. You're definitely not allowed in the church if you don't have a proper veil. So I need to maybe get a veil before I check out the Eastern Orthodox Church.
I didn't know it was that extreme.
It's very strict. That's part of what's good about it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, yes. Somebody said here, this is quite funny, he said, the trouble is women working as well. Back in the day, you only really had to keep an eye on the milkman and the window cleaner. I like that. But something occurred to me about the previous question about the guy in Norway saying, how can we deal with the negative effects of social media, Tinder, hypergamy?
Oh, right.
And yeah. Something occurred to me about that I should have said myself, which is that you should just try to become a better man. I mean, if you feel like it's 80-20, you want to try either be in that top 20 or as close to it as you can possibly get. I mean, the worst thing you can do is say, oh, it's just all gamed against me. I don't stand a chance. That's the end of it. I'll just be depressed. Why not? You may as well, if you've got nothing to lose, you may as well try. You may as well try to get better and so that you're in with a chance. I mean, even if it is that horrible cutthroat ratio, if it's that horrible situation, you may as well try to win in that horrible situation. It's better than losing in that horrible situation.
I totally agree. And the other thing is that, you know, like we said before, women need to be led. Women would prefer to be led. So expecting to find like a totally red-pilled, like trad virgin waifu just like walking around in modern society is maybe a little unrealistic. But what you could possibly hope for is that you could find a feminine woman who maybe is a bit shy and who is responsive to your influence. And you can red pill her over the course of time because she is, she trusts you and she appreciates your opinion. Like that's kind of what happened to me. Like I wasn't where I am now when my husband met me, right? Like there are things that he red pilled me on over the course of our relationship and it didn't happen overnight. It was gradual. I think it's much more realistic to, be hopeful about finding a woman who is feminine, as in a woman who is receptive to your influence. And then you do the work of trying to, you know, deprogram her than just expecting to find a perfect woman.
Yeah. So he says, I was thinking more broadly for most men in society as a whole, only full solution will be to drastically, hold on a second, change the whole culture, I believe. Well, yeah, but we can't do that overnight. That's the trouble. Right?
Yeah,
I don't think you can even sort of blueprint a solution to this. You can't come up with a better culture and then say, right, now let's implement that. It doesn't work that way. I mean, if you could have a dictatorship, then yes, you could just entirely redesign society. But we don't have a dictatorship. So I think you just have to deal with the situation that you find yourself in. Now, another guy said, women's hypergamy will destroy society no matter how hard you try as an individual. I think that's a bit too much, honestly.
That's how we survive, though. Like, we're vulnerable. And it's like, that's our mating strategy for better or for worse. Like, ideally, we would like to find a man who we don't want to monkey branch away from, right? Like, women don't prefer to be monkey branching from like pathetic man to pathetic man and like rolling the dice and seeing if they're going to get a good guy this time. Women would prefer, like you said earlier, to meet a good man when they're young, who's like right for them and who's going to take on the masculine role and then inspire the feminine role in them.
Yeah, exactly. So again, a better thing is to try to be as good a man as possible. And by good, yes, I mean like, proper, not just nice. I mean a good man, yes, a good quality man. So there we go. Someone says, a woman who admires her man will adopt many of his beliefs, but if she stops admiring you, don't expect her to sit around very long. But yes, that's true. That is true. A woman's contempt is a powerful thing, and it's pretty venomous. But again, the answer is to be a guy who she's not going to stop admiring.
Yes. I think women are going to, women are going to eventually realize that the best men are in places like church, you know, like it's that thing with how conservative men or right-wing men tend to be more masculine than left-wing men. I think that there's going to be a realization at some point. There has to be. I mean, maybe not, because women are very great at being stubborn. But, you know, for the women who want a masculine man, right, that they want a good man, they're either going to have to realize that those men are not available to them unless they straighten themselves out, or they're just going to have to like settle for betas. So, I mean, I think what happened to me with regard to like moving from left to right, I think this is something that's happening all over the West right now, you know, to more and less degrees. There are people who are stuck at different points of the red pill because of censorship and the way that the elites are sort of cracking down on the spread of this information. But I think that they're, you know, as we're moving into 2020, we're getting the last groups of our society which are open and receptive to these things and are, have enough self-awareness and, you know, can be honest with themselves enough to realize where they've gone wrong and they're switching sides. And I'm really hoping that a lot of women will repent for what they've done, you know, and how the effect that they've had on society and how they've, you know, hurt themselves in a big way.
Mm. Yeah. Somebody pointed out, this is a question that I've devised based on someone else's comment. Mm-hmm. Do you, because there's a thing I saw a few weeks ago that if the refugees were not African men, but, or Middle Eastern men, but Japanese women, mm-hmm. liberal white women would become fascist overnight in response. What do you think about it?
I think that's totally possible because those women, Japanese women, tend to be more feminine. They're very petite. They're very beautiful. They have a sense of like what is traditionally feminine in a lot of ways. And I've heard some pretty, you know, intense stories about like dragon moms too, you know, like Asian women who once they're married, they turn into monsters and they're kind of like chasing their husband around with a shoe. But for the dating prospects aspect of this, right, these women would pose a serious threat to their mating choices. And I think liberal women are already quite fascist in their own way. They aren't really open to alternative points of view. And they're not the biggest proponents of freedom of speech. So I think that it would be a very strong possibility that they would revolt against this refugee crisis.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think you're absolutely right. It's men who actually enjoy freedom and liberty. Women, in whatever state they're in, whether it's progressive or not, and they are far more doctrinaire and inflexible and in less need of flexibility than men are.
Yes, definitely.
Which is why, you know, in a sense, we are, in previous ages, we have relied on women to maintain social standards, moral standards. Yes. While at the same time, it's bloody complicated, because at the same time, you need men to lay down those standards and say, this is what this society, this community is going to be about. But yes, it's complicated. It is more nuanced than a lot of people pretend.
Yes, and I'm finding that out more and more. The more I interact with women on the right, or who are, you know, not necessarily all the women who watch me are even, I think, that political, because it's really not super feminine to be like hardcore into politics. You know, it's kind of more of a men's domain, and that's okay. But a lot of the women that I'm encountering through the content that I'm creating right now on my channel, you require a lot of nuance in order to interact with them, because like we've said a number of times in this conversation, we're all kind of scarred by modernity, and you need that sense of nuance in order to bring people back from the fray, which is that's my preoccupation. Not interested in finger wagging. I'm interested in, you know, reaching out a hand or an olive branch.
Yeah, well, I think you're absolutely right. That attitude, I think, is far more constructive than a lot of what we see in the movement. So, okay, is there anything else you'd like to say about your 2019?
There's nothing that gives you more hope than a new baby on the way, right? So I'm in a really good place. I'm very grateful for the community that I've built over on YouTube. I'm really grateful that I have an opportunity to share what success I've had in my life with other people. And I hope that it can have a positive effect, even in some small way, on women. You know, like I hear you. I'm not looking at the chat, but I know there are men lamenting women in the chat, right? Like that's just always how it is. Some of us are really trying our best to make women better, right? We acknowledge that there's a big problem in you know, women, modern women. And I don't think that that's going to change unless we see positive, happy, friendly representations of femininity and motherhood. And so that's what I'm trying to build. And I hope that it'll continue into the new year.
Yes. One final super chat. Are either of you familiar with the Great Awakening or QAnon? And if so, do you have any thoughts on the matter?
No, I Like, I know QAnon is like a boomer thing. Like, it's like a thing where you're like looking for clues on the internet, and there's like a release of clues about things, and it has something to do with Trump. But like, I have not been involved with following the Trump saga for a very long time now. I think like since Yang Gang, I was like, guys, I'm out. This is retarded. I don't want to follow this. I don't want this in my life anymore. I think it's more of a boomer thing. And I don't, what was the thing? The Great Awakening? Great
Awakening, but I don't know what that's referring to.
I think I've heard of that maybe. It might be a documentary or something like that. I'm not sure. I used to be a lot more into conspiracy theories than I am now. That was, you know, how I really got into YouTube was watching conspiracy theory videos and stuff like that. But not so much my preoccupation anymore.
Someone's saying QAnon is cringe and blue-pilled.
Yeah, I mean, well, if like a large amount of boomers are involved, likely, like, I don't know, there's definitely some good boomers out there. Don't want to shame all the boomers, but generally if there's a large congregation of like MAGA moms involved, yeah. Like, yeah. it's going to be cringe, unfortunately.
I'm afraid so. Okay, one more question here. Is it wrong? And this is, I love this guy's username. I think it's brilliant. Heterosexual synth pop enthusiast. Is it wrong for me to join a church despite not believing in God?
No, of course not. You might find that by joining the church, your faith increases. You know, lots of people come to the church on their knees after the world has chewed them up and spit them out. And it's coming to a place of worship where they can find community. They can find camaraderie with people who have also suffered. They can find women possibly to build families with, and they can find spiritual guidance that can actually awaken their hearts and their souls to the reality of God. And then they can start to see and feel God in their life. The church is a community institution. You don't have to be a devout anything to go to a place of worship and avail of what that institution has to offer you. I would encourage anyone with even the slightest whisper of a voice in their head, which is telling them to go to their church, their local church, their local parish, and check out what's going on, to follow that and to listen to that voice and see where it leads you.
Right. Okay. Finally, you said about earlier, you said about how pregnancy changes you and how the impending motherhood changes you. Would you like to just briefly go into that?
Sure. Well, so where will I start? I think that a lot of women are afraid of motherhood, right? They're afraid of the pain of motherhood. They're afraid of losing autonomy over their bodies. They're afraid of all of the propaganda that's out there about children taking up all of your time and taking up all of your free money. And it's really sold to women as this, you know, this boulder that they have to willingly put on their back and drag uphill for 20 years. And I think that that's a horrible, horrible lie that has been propagated in our society. And I feel that if women actually look at the mom communities that are online, they'll see that there are tons of women who have extremely fulfilled lives. They're very happy. It's not as difficult as people make it out to be. Like, there is a political agenda behind making women feel this way, right? There is an antinatalist movement that exists all across modern society, and it's propagated mostly by the left. Motherhood is where women become women. Like, I feel like I was kind of a girl until I became pregnant, and I am for the first time experiencing what it's like to become a woman. And my life is about to change dramatically as a result of giving birth to my son. I'm going to have a boy. I'm really excited about that. I think that there is something that's a little bit sacrificial about that, but there is something transformative about sacrifice, right? When we go through suffering, when we go through hardship, in any area of life, we often come out stronger and better and wiser for doing so. And I think that women who are currently, you know, in their 30s, but still functioning as girls in a large way, the only way that they're going to actually experience true motherhood, true womanhood, is by taking on motherhood with hope and an open heart and seeing it as like, this is what I was meant to do. You know, it's such a magical process. You know, I can feel him kicking like right now inside of me. And it's an incredible feeling. Now, I know you'll hear women say all the time, you know, it's, I'm growing a life inside me and like I'm creating this life, but there is something automatic about it, right? Like this is an automatic process that for me has brought me very close to God, because like I just have to eat healthy and take my vitamins and do my exercise, right? And then the baby just grows. The baby just comes into this world. There's something I think that's so grounding about the whole experience. And I hope that for every woman out there who wants it, that she can achieve it. For those women out there who maybe they've missed their chance, or they have been led astray and couldn't find a man in time, that maternal instinct in you will still need to be satisfied. It's a woman's need to have that maternal instinct satisfied. And so I say, look to your community, look to your nieces and nephews. Consider adoption. You know, there are lots of children, lots of white children in societies that need good homes. You know, look to how you can care for others and express and engage your maternal instinct in a way that will benefit the wider society. You know, that can be a redemption arc for these women too. So while I want to stress that it's like, to me, it's like, it's everything. I feel like this is what I was born to do. And I'm so excited and grateful that I get to do it. But I don't want to reduce the entire experience of womanhood to having children, because of course we have allies and right-wing women who won't be able to bear children. That doesn't mean you can't express your womanly traits and your maternal instincts in other positive ways. So that's sort of what I think about that.
Okay. All right. Well, let's leave it at that, because I think that was a nice place to end.
Perfect.
All right. So hopefully you'll be on again next year.
Yes, I hope so.
And with a story to tell then as well.
Yes, it'll be a whole new journey, because I'll probably have a little baby strapped on me.
Hopefully. I think that would be really nice.
Yes.
All right. So Critical Condition, CC Bucko, Robin Riley, thank you for being part of Millennial 2019. And thank you to everyone for watching. I'll be back in about 40 minutes with, I believe it's Artemisian Aesthetic, who I'll let her describe herself when she comes on. In the meantime, Robin, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. Merry Christmas, Woes.
Merry Christmas to you too. And I'll see you all in about 40 minutes. See you later.
Bye.